tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
This is the In Tech We Trust podcast. It's episode 110. I'm back from like vacation or something. I've been around for ages. I'm Nigel.
We've missed you.
Oh, thanks.
Who?
So I'm Nigel.
Who?
Nigel, yeah, Nigel who? Yeah. I'm Edine Porter de Leon.
I'm Lauren Malhoit.
And I'm Mark Farley.
Cool. Now, shall we get into the technology? Because we don't really want to talk about the election, which by the time you listen to this is all over and the world is either a great place or not.
That's why I'm drinking a beer right now, because of the election.
Yeah. Might want to drink more.
No. You're drinking a beer because you like beer and you brew beer and you're good at it.
Like, yeah, I need an excuse.
Yeah.
That's my excuse.
Yeah. That beer you gave me, by the way, was it a triple?
A Belgian double.
A double.
Hopped up Belgian double.
It was good. Nadine, your beer was really good.
Nice. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Quick question then. So who's the better brewer? Is it you, Mark, or is it you, Yadin?
Oh, I don't know.
You too.
You're both brewers.
You know what? I'm going to say Yadin's a better brewer. There you go.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I've actually never had your beer, Mark, so I couldn't tell.
It sells out. I'm going to have to.
You see how I just dropped that hint there? Never tasted your beer.
Well, next time we're all in California, we'll get out that measuring tape and see what we can figure out.
When's your birthday? Whoa.
This show just took a harsh turn.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm going to have to go get some chemicals in me or something.
Nice. I hear meth is good this time of year.
It's being measured, I believe, in better living through chemistry.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so, Nigel, what do we have to talk about today?
What do we have to talk about? Three things, right? So we've got something about Extreme.io. We've got something about Microsoft partnering with Nubar. And Azure Container Service now supports Kubernetes clusters. But I think this is only personal opinion, right? But the highlight of the show this week is going to be hot or not. So if you're a listener, you need to stick around till the end, which I think we've only got three tech items, right? So it ain't going to be very long.
So what is that? What are we talking about? Hot or not? Like weather? The weather?
No. Oh, honestly, wait.
Don't spoil it. We're gonna tease this out.
No spoil.
Got to make it to the end.
So let's hit the Extreme.io one first, right? So apparently Extreme.io is causing issues at a hospital in Minnesota. Now, the first thing I want to say here, right, is issues being caused at hospitals, no fun for anybody, right? So here's a question right off the bat, okay? In hospitals and healthcare and stuff like that, we quite often say, oh, you know, there's an array down or there's some kind of tech mishap, right? I want to know, like, how deeply entrenched in the health service and in healthcare technology like an Extreme.io is, right? Because I naturally conjure up these visions of surgeons, you know, looking at live feeds from a tablet that's being fed by an Extreme.io across, like, some Cisco ACI network or something like that. Now, it might be like that in the US, because I know your healthcare service is kind of like, it's more expensive than ours, but it's better than ours as well. But I've got to tell you, over here in the UK, they get like a felt tip pen out and they like write on your body. And I don't think there's much technology in the operating theatre, if you know what I mean. So I'm saying here, okay, there's an Extreme.io storage array that's causing, air quotes here, issues at a healthcare service in Minnesota. But like, what kind of issues, right? I mean, are they not able to bill people or something? Or is it literally people on an operating table gonna die because of the Extreme.io?
Well, it looks like it's the record system, right? Those, what are they called? ERIs. So in my mind, it's more about when they're going to check patient history. And we do, at least in the US, have, you know, a ton of doctors using tablets at this point to, you know, they're not pulling patients' records anymore. They're not pulling files. They're, getting these electronic records. And a lot of it is to get history or to find allergies, right? Like, personally, I'm allergic to codeine. Now I just told, like, my arch nemesis how to, you know, make me really sick, I guess. Not, it wouldn't kill me, but that's important, right? If someone's really allergic to a certain kind of medicine and the doctors can't see that while they're maybe in the ER trying to help someone or maybe in surgery and something goes wrong, then that could be a major issue, right? But on the other hand, too, should we just be depending on this one Xtreme.io storage appliance, especially when we know the history there, right? I mean, you guys made the podcast for like months just talking about Xtreme.io and the problems there. And I'm not saying it's a bad appliance either. I think it's a great appliance, and I think that they've done a lot with Flash for EMC. But, you know, is it also the problem of design of your data center? I don't know.
So I think it stinks, Lauren. Xtreme.io, by the way. I'm like really gutted. So I'm not so much of a storage guy these days, but I really used to think of myself as a storage guy at least. And, you know, back in those days when I was around, I don't know, like EMC, you didn't get fired for buying EMC. And now it seems like you can hardly read the news, you know, for a month without some Xtreme.io story coming up saying it's flaked here or it's barked over there. EMC used to be kind of like the gold standard, you know, and have they like sold out? And I mean, okay, it would make big news if a Symmetrics went down back in the day, you know, and it would, you'd get like one or two a year or something. But these Xtreme.io boxes, I am not sold on them. It's not the storage that your granddad or your grandmother used to use, I don't think.
Does anyone know what, you know, Xtreme.io is compared to other all-flash arrays? You know, are those in the news too? And, you know, I'm not the storage guru, as everyone who listens to this normally knows. So, Nigel, you might be totally right there. I'm just kind of curious.
It's probably fair to say there's a lot of them out there. So that might kind of skew some of the stuff that comes into the news. And probably because it's EMC, people love to have a poke at EMC as well.
Sure.
Yeah, so, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, really among the vendors, you really don't hear or see too many people saying, oh, we don't have that problem, because everybody has the problem. And I think EMC's response to this would say, yeah, we do have a lot of them out there. But, you know, you could look at other vendors and you'd say, well, they've got a lot of them out there, too. Pure certainly has a lot of flash, all flash out there. And my guess is, you know, the Hitachi's getting a bunch out there and HPE is getting a bunch out there. And then, you know, Tegile has a bunch out there, and, you know, Nimble's got them out there. Everybody's got systems out there. And
got to mention SolidFire.
SolidFire, absolutely. Sorry. And the reason why you don't see vendors going after this is because we, you know, on the vendor side, everybody knows that it's going to be your turn sooner or later. It just happens. Something goes wrong. And, you know, to answer your question, Nigel, I really don't want to have holograms projected on me or something while I'm in the operating table. It might be kind of cool. And operating rooms, of course, are quite cool. But I'm fine with the magic markers, you know, over the iodine and all that stuff, because I want, you know, the last time I went in the operating room to have, you know, surgery, they asked me about 8 times what I was in for, you know, and wrote on me. And it's like, yeah, left knee, left knee, left knee. It wasn't
not
like
this leg, not this leg,
not a testicle, not this other thing, you know.
And the last thing you wanted, like right in the middle of it, it's like, hold on 1 second. Oh, Microsoft's doing an update. Just wait.
Yeah. I'm okay with surgeons being mostly manual. You know, that's fine. Until we get the real, you know, self-surgery at home, you know, I'm fine with it being a manual process of identifying what's going to be operated on. I mean, these things happen all the time. Was there any explanation of what went wrong? Was it related to an upgrade or something like that? I mean, that's kind of been the interesting, fun part with Xtreme.io for a while.
Yeah, so the article, I'd read 2 articles, and they didn't go into detail. What they did say was, though, that apparently they'd been an HDS customer for a lot of years and had had one outage in, like, at least a handful of years. Yet, apparently in the last year, they've had 3 outages with the Xtreme.io. Now, look, I mean, I've not spoken to a direct source or anything, so I'm just going from articles that are printed on the online press, but it's not painting a great picture. But I guess as well, right, we're saying, okay, so there's a lot of Xtreme.io's out there, maybe compared to some of the other all-flash vendors. And also, I don't know, technology is becoming more and more a part of or more and more an integral part of healthcare and stuff like that. So we're bound to see more and more things like this happen. Maybe we wouldn't see it 5 years ago, because 5 years ago they probably weren't even, well, it was probably all pen and paper. I'm being a bit extreme there, right? But, you know, the more and more pervasive this stuff gets, the more and more integrated into the everyday operations of everything we do, we're bound to come across more issues, I guess, right?
I agree. I guess I'm still stuck on these articles, right? So it's one hospital in one place that, as they admit, has experience with Hitachi and not EMC. Is it the failure to design properly? You know, is it something else? I mean, are there bugs here? Because they don't talk about any bugs being reported. I don't know. I guess my history as some channel partner or something, and now as a vendor, is to blame the customer. Maybe that's wrong. But
it's good,
but
shout,
I think it
though.
Is a question.
It's a natural bias. I understand.
Yeah, but you know, but sometimes that happens, right? Sometimes, and especially a vendor, or not a vendor, but a customer that's accustomed to working with another vendor's product, they may make assumptions about how something works in another product, and it might be the wrong assumption. I mean, and I think we're all familiar with, you know, the bad customer scenario, and unfortunately, it happens where somebody is in over their head, they don't quite know what they're doing, things go wrong, and then during the process of trying to solve or fix something that is a little bit wrong, it gets drastically wrong. And I'm not saying that's what went on here. You know, it could be a hardware failure, it could be a software bug. It could be, though, an administrator responding the wrong way to a prompt, and that starts the slippery slope. And, you know, this is why we need higher levels of automation in all of these products, right? We need automated reporting. We need automated metrics. You know, the more automation we have, we take the human being out of it. A lot of times things happen. The protein robot happened to be the weakest link. Sometimes it's not the customer protein. Sometimes it's the vendor protein. A support person says the wrong thing. You know, and I think we've all seen situations where, you know, a service person has shown up and said something like, oh, this is what it looks like. You know, probably not the case with Extreme.io, though.
No, probably not. But, you know, as well, if they are a long-time HDS shop, there's quite possibly some politics going on there as well. You know, there's bound to be a lot of people in there that, well, there's the potential that there are people in there that would like to see Extreme.io fail and would like to put it in the news and stuff like that. So, interesting. So, some really good points. Are we ready to move on?
I think so.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, so I'm interested in this one. Microsoft partnering with a startup called Nubar. Got an interesting story there about where the name came from in a minute. So they're a startup that have taken $4 million so far in two rounds of funding. But the whole kind of, well, at least what they're doing here is they're putting an S3, so an AWS S3 front onto Azure Blob Storage. Effectively, the way I see it, right, lobotomizing, or at very least commoditizing Azure Blob Storage. But I guess the idea is that they can make any kind of storage look like AWS S3. And I'm like, okay, so Microsoft have got this rival platform to Amazon Web Services, and they've got their own like object storage platforms and protocols and all that kind of stuff, right? But are we at the point now where we're just saying, okay, Microsoft, maybe they've made this investment in Azure Blob Storage, but the market's already chosen S3 as like the default API, the default way to interact with it. So forget all that investment you've made, Microsoft. Let's just make it look, smell, and feel like S3. And if that is the case, we're going to see a lot of this. Does Microsoft care? Should Microsoft care?
Well, I mean, this has become the default standard, like you said, S3, and that's kind of been chosen the winner. And just like any complex system environment, once you have something that's trending towards standardization, you're going to get a lot of support behind, a lot of people coding that, just like you said, ingesting the APIs in one common way, and they're going to want that same thing from Microsoft. So I think this is, you know, the S3 API has just become a commodity that Microsoft is adopting.
I think it's interesting. I actually gave a whole presentation on this subject today. Talking about Cisco Cloud Center, and that ability to use one API when your, you know, devs or your ops people are used to it, right? Not having to retrain on all the different APIs from all the different clouds and then retrain every time they upgrade and then retrain every time your application changes. And I do think that's important. And I think we are, there was a survey done by CloudView this year in January that said 60% of commercial and enterprise customers are going to a multi-cloud topology, meaning multiple clouds, not just hybrid, but also using AWS, using Azure, using Google. So I think we're just going to see more and more of this, even with the VMware partnering with AWS, right? It's getting that same UI that customers are used to. Now, when they all become kind of the same, what do you do then? Well, I would say buy a cloud center because I work for Cisco, but you know, I think that this is something that we're going to see more of.
Well placed, Lauren. Well placed.
Thank you.
You develop non-standard API extensions that only work in your cloud and infuriate everybody.
Nice. Yeah. I like that.
Great.
No, but Mark, therein is a danger. I think you've hit on something there because we're saying, okay, that S3 is the de facto standard here. But let's not forget, S3, okay, so it's so widely used that everybody codes to it, everybody knows and what have you. But it's owned by Amazon at the end of the day, and they're free to change it at their will, really, and to play around with it to favor their platform. Now, they've not really done so far, but I wonder, is there a danger in that, in saying, okay, it's so widely used, and they've played ball with it so far so good, we'll trust them. And I don't know, are you dancing with the devil there?
Like, does it become the new Twitter client where every time Twitter updates, you're screwed?
No, that's a good point. Yeah.
Well, I mean, AWS has struggled this for a while. Every time they change the APIs a little bit, it breaks people's code, and they've got to stick to a standard. So you've got a little bit of lock-in or a little bit of standardization. AWS is going to make a lot of people who are their clients angry if they update it. And I think there's, you know, a twofold. One, yes, there is a danger of moving to an AWS standard, then AWS has the control to a certain extent. But at the same time, then AWS is putting a whole lot of energy and resources into something that's just become commoditized. So the power starts to drain out of that. Yes, it's become a standard, but they have to maintain it. And so they have to be the ones to, you know, to put in the time to test it and to come up with new versioning. And then everyone, all I have to do is just copy it. It's not a huge differentiator like it used to be.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder if the writing's on the wall, if it's the end of the road for everybody else developing APIs. And this includes private cloud too, right? If everything has to be compatible with something that comes from Amazon, that's a different world. It's an interesting world. I think some people already think that's happening, or has.
Yeah,
happened.
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, you guys think? I mean, a lot of people have said API has become the product in many cases for many companies. Do you guys think that's true?
I think there's something in that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think
absolutely.
There's, yeah.
I can say this as well, right? Just harking back to Mark's point. If you are a customer deploying or looking to leverage Sneer's CDMI, don't bother. But I think we've known that for a long time. Okay, never mind. We've got one more story before we go to hot or not, unless anybody has anything else to say on that.
No, I think we're good.
All right. So one more story. Microsoft's Azure Container Service now supports Kubernetes, making it easier to build and deploy Kubernetes clusters through ACS.
I don't think you're pronouncing it right, Nigel.
Cumbernauts.
Yes,
sorry. According to my wife, Cumbernauts. Yeah. So I don't know. Kubernetes seems to march on. I will say ACS supports, I think it supports Mesosphere, Swarm, and now Kubernetes.
So what is ACS? When I think of it, I think of authentication system.
No,
what you're talking about.
Azure Container Service. So you can like build templates and things like that to deploy clusters. So now you can deploy or you can more easily deploy Kubernetes clusters using Amazon.
Lauren, that was so silly of you to not know that.
That's what I'm here for.
Notice that nobody else was chiming in though either.
Hey, she came with a bunch of really great stats on that last cloud section. So
I peaked early, and then you know, it happens.
Yeah, and no, I don't know what your take on this too, but it seems like this is something that people are going to come to expect from Azure, and it seems like an extension from a lot of their other open source projects. It seems like a natural extension of this open sourced container centric view. But the only thing that confuses me though is because you had some great points, Nigel, before about how they're running Docker and how that ecosystem is really thriving. And maybe you can give your thoughts. Well, why would I use Azure Container Services versus running Docker?
So personally, I don't advise people to do that. And I say the same about Amazon Web Services, ECS, EC2 Container Service. Because I think certainly the way they're panning out at the moment, you're kind of locking yourself into those cloud platforms. I would much rather the way the ecosystem and the landscape looks at the moment, right, is take something like just native Kubernetes or native Swarm or something like that, which you own, you can run on-premises across clouds and things like that, and then you're not locked into Amazon's own flavor of a container registry and service and things, or Azure's, or, you know, Microsoft's own version. They're dead simple to use, okay? So if you're doing some development and things like that, it's probably a great use case because they're so easy to spin things up. But I'm not recommending people at the moment go down that route for production, because I think you're almost backing yourself or painting yourself into a corner there and saying, okay, we'll be an Azure shop. And I don't think that's the future. Somebody's mentioned it already on the podcast today, haven't they? Saying, you know, it's the norm these days, not just to go like on-premises and public as a hybrid cloud, but to be leveraging your business across multiple clouds. And I think any time you say that you're going to go with one vendor's service, ACS, Azure Container Service, or EC2 Container Service, you're almost, I mean, look, this might change in the future. They might manage cross-platform in the future. But right now, no, you're kind of painting yourself in there. And I'm just not recommending people.
You're sort of like pushing yourself into potential just future silos. So silos in the cloud.
Yeah, and why would you do that, right?
Yeah.
Here's my question, kind of looking at the overall picture of even this podcast, right? I'm reading a book called Digital Wars, and it was published a few years ago, but it's all about Google, Apple, and Microsoft, and, you know, what they did, how they came to be, what they did in the future to outdo each other as we move along, right? And these things are still happening.
Wait a minute.
You know?
What they did in the future? I love this. I have to get this book.
Nice.
Yeah, what they did in the future. It was written in 2030. No.
Here's a picture of me when I'm older. It's like, whoa.
What kind of bookstore do you go to, man? This is like awesome.
You know, it's I am on my second vodka soda, I'll admit. So there's some tense
I need to get another beer to catch up.
But it makes me think about the way Microsoft did things in the beginning, right? Putting all their stuff on different hardware. And obviously they're kind of not reining it in, but they're making their own hardware. So now we have two stories on Microsoft either, you know, allowing people to use their cloud and use the APIs of AWS, right? And then we have another story about them using Kubernetes, which is originally Google's project, right? Even if it's somewhat open source or whatever you call it. Is this Microsoft kind of doing its thing where it's allowing people to use different things, but as long as you're buying some Microsoft in there, it all works out?
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to look at it too. And I was just thinking about that as you were talking. And it kind of clarifies that is that they're probably got people asking for this ACS, and you probably got a lot of Microsoft shops that are, you know what, we're all in an Azure and we want to create, you know, something within an Azure container service. We don't need Docker. We don't want to go in there. But Microsoft is also allowing Docker to operate in there. And so people get to choose whether they want to be all in Azure or they want to have a little more agility, a little more cross-platform compatibility. And I think there's room for that.
It certainly seems like the Microsoft model these days is, you know, they'll do anything and let you run anything just to get you on their cloud. And it's a solid platform, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they need to do that. But we said this with Linux a long time ago when it was on Azure, didn't we? That, you know, wow, here's Microsoft embracing Linux. Well, you know what? Microsoft will embrace anything that gets them customers, which is pretty decent business model. You know, it's working for them at the moment.
But I don't think we should think of them as cloud whores.
Why not? I like that.
That's a good way of putting it.
That would be Oracle.
Because they are making money off the cloud.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You know, so it's not like, well, but, you know, whores make money.
Oh, yeah, they do.
And sometimes pretty good money, I think.
Hey, it's the oldest business, right? Yeah.
Okay, so maybe they are. Yeah, okay.
But it's the way to do it. That's the way to operate, right? Everybody should be a cloud whore. That's the name of the podcast.
Oh, boy.
Done and done.
Yeah. Hey, let's just quit now. Why have a hot or not?
Hot or not, the title of the podcast.
Hot.
Smoking hot.
Not.
Now, I do want to just quickly go back to the previous story before we go to hot or not, because I did say I had a mildly interesting story about where the name Nubar came from.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
It sounds like nubile, right? Is anyone else?
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Yeah.
Sorry, I took a turn for the worst.
Yeah, if it's already gone, it's lost. Yeah, I thought so, though, too, Lauren.
No, they wanted noob.com as in, like, newbie, yeah? But GoDaddy was like, well, that's obviously taken. And it offered them nubar.com along with a bunch of other options. And they thought, oh, Nubar, that's okay. So, I mean, what kind of a way to choose a company name is that? You know, we want a domain name. Oh, we can't get it. GoDaddy recommends usually pretty crappy alternatives, and they did in this case. Oh, we'll name the company that.
Yeah, that's like picking your Twitter handle. Like, I type mine in, and it suggests these other three. Like, you know, yeah. Oh, why don't you be noob12885? Oh, yeah. That seems like a good Twitter handle. We'll use that.
Yeah, Yadin5672.
Yeah, I should check, actually, if @Yadin is available. I should have gone with that rather than @PorterDeLeon.
Yeah. Figuring @Yadin is gone.
Yeah, it is. There's actually Yadin Porter de Leon's, because I was looking for you on Twitter back, you know, months ago, and there are others out there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my
goodness.
God. They're
clowns.
They are clowns, man. They're trolling you so hard.
Did you say clowns? I said clones.
Yeah, I said clowns.
Both.
They're clone clowns. The creepiest kind.
Yeah. No
this
shit.
Is actually the second story I've heard of. Names being picked because you can't get them, though. You know, I was just listening to Tim Ferriss's podcast, and he was talking to the guy who created Ruby on Rails, which is, you know, a coding platform or whatever you call it. And he couldn't get Ruby, and he couldn't get Rails. So he was just like, I'll put it together, Ruby on Rails. And that's what we'll call both the language and the website and whatever.
Nice. So, yeah, there are a bunch of...
how many there are out there.
I don't know. I just saw there are a bunch of Yadins. Someone's just squatting on @Yadin on Twitter. They like only have 6 tweets.
He's waiting for you to pay for it, man.
Yeah, and I'm not paying.
Mm-mm. They're waiting for the borders to open up.
We shall see.
Should we wind it out with a hot or not then? Because I'm excited about this.
Oh, boy.
I think that's best.
All right.
I'm nervous.
Ooh, are we going to do a drum roll for this? Yeah.
Are you doing this, Lauren?
No, I didn't participate in that.
Are you going to do the hot or not for us, though?
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now on In Tech We Trust, it's time for hot or not.
I thought you were doing it. I'm sorry.
I can do it if you want.
Yeah, you do it. You're
I can always do it.
It's your story, man.
All right. So I saw something on Twitter earlier this week. I don't think it's actually called this, but it was tweeted out as a USB condom. And I'm like, what?
What?
Now, for Americans, that's condom.
Oh, condom. Right. Okay. Yeah.
What did you call it?
Condom.
Condom.
Yeah.
A condom? That sounds like condom.
Did you say condon? Or
yes. Aluminium. You know, aluminium can be used for a condom.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, it can't.
Condom?
I'm on a podcast with heathens, aren't I?
Yeah, I think an aluminum. I think an aluminium.
Aluminium.
A condom could be a problem.
So, this product, a USB condom. Does that work for you, Lauren?
No, right? Nigel, I was just specifying for the stupid Americans listening. I want you should say it at, like, the proper way that English speakers probably say it.
I'm just saying this has to be wireless.
Yeah. Well, so I was like, what is one of them? Anyway, so it turns out that the technical implementation thereof is not quite as cool as the name. Not quite as cool as what I imagined. Who's heard that before? Anyway, so the idea is that if you're going to plug in your phone or your laptop, well, I guess it would be your phone, into a USB port on an aeroplane, in an airport, on a train, at a conference center, something like that, an untrusted USB port because you want to charge it, you could be open to it getting access to your phone, malware, anything like that. So this device just allows power to pass through and not data. So effectively protecting your phone from being hijacked and just letting you charge it, which is what you want to do, right? So hence the idea, it is a USB condom. Now, is that hot or is that hot?
We have no choice but to comply.
Is it hot or is it hot? That was bad,
I'll jump in here and I'm going to say it's hot. I think it's very hot. And the reason why, you know, I just came off of a long trip with V Brown Bag, and all we did was just plug people's USB sticks into our own personal laptops to upload it to Dropbox, you know, their presentations or videos or whatever. And it was, you know, probably 40 or 50 USB sticks that weren't mine that I was sticking into my computer. So if this could also apply to a USB stick that I plug into my computer and I put a little condom on it, I think that's very hot.
Cool. Do you know what? I've just tried to get usbcondom.com. How on earth is that already taken?
Oh, come on.
Everything's taken.
Come on.
It's rubbish, isn't it?
It was gone a long time ago.
Yeah. Never mind. So, anybody else, hot or not?
I'm going to go not hot.
Yay!
Not hot at all.
We have a new curmudgeon.
Yeah, the USB. You know what? You know where I see this being a problem though is because right now you can actually run data over power only. Like there's data over power. Like there's nice little adapters you can get if you want to run Ethernet just through your house from one outlet to another. So this is really just, I think, a stopgap. If someone really wants to get through the USB, they're going to, and they're probably, I mean, a lot of these attacks now are in machine time speed and not humans on keyboard. So having a script that, you know, that runs an attack, first checking for data validation, then just running it over, you know, over the power, I'm sure you can get through that. I just don't see this being a 100% effective. Not that condoms are rated to be 100% effective. But that's my take on it.
I am so mixed on this. I really don't know where to go. I mean, the idea is that, you know, you can give your phone a power hard-on without any juices flowing.
We knew someone was going to take it.
Wait a minute.
I expected nothing less.
A condom that lets the juice through.
No, it doesn't let the juice. Yeah, it does let the juice through. Right. It lets the juice through.
Right? Yeah. So what kind of condom is that?
Well, I think we just figured out their marketing campaign.
Yeah, it's one that filters out, you know, like the sperm or something, right?
Yeah. Lets the good juice through.
Yeah, it lets the good juice through, and there's no...
Depends on your definition.
There's no breeding that can occur.
There you go. There's a new title for the show, Letting the Good Juice Through.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. This is quite a conundrum, man. I'm thinking, what are we getting ourselves set up for? So the idea is that if you hook into like a Samsung port in an airport, somebody will have infiltrated that and put computer germs in it that will get into your machine and infiltrate the world and do denial of service attacks on like voting stuff.
Well, can it help with the Samsung explosion? Will it contain that?
Oh man. Yeah. that's really great, right? Yeah, so what if the power thing in an airport recognized it was a Samsung phone and then like boldly overcharged it? So like 3 hours later on an airplane, the thing will blow up.
Man.
God, this is great. Or maybe they would recognize, maybe Samsung would do it and recognize it's an Apple phone and attempt to overcharge an Apple phone.
Nigel, what's your opinion on this?
I think this is so hot.
Well, my opinion is that Mark would make like a great bad guy. Got all these ideas. Nefarious stuff.
He's already on the terror watch list.
Hey, so my opinion is that it's kind of hot, right? What I liked about it, other than the name, well, it's not even the name, but the idea, USB condom, yeah, I like that. But was that I never even thought about that as a security risk before. So it kind of opened my eyes to like, oh. Because, and I think you should be really security savvy these days, you know. And I like to think of myself as being moderately security savvy. You know, I don't open stupid emails and attachments and stuff like my mother and what have you. But I had never thought about that as like a potential risk. And I'd like plug my phone in and stuff anywhere if I thought I could get a bit of extra charge on it. Now, not going down that route.
Yeah, the next thing.
So are you a USB whore, Nigel?
Yes, definitely. I am, yeah.
Next thing we're going to have to watch out for is a condom for your headphone jack.
Oh. Unless you're not.
See, the problem is these kids will get a hold of these condoms and they'll just feel like they could, you know, stick their USB things in.
Exactly. Yeah. So they'll be giving them out at school.
Stick them anywhere.
You don't need a headphone jack condom for the new iPhones because they don't have
a family. This is a family issue. It's a big family issue.
That's right. Man.
It'll be on the next ballot. We can expect it in 2020.
USB condoms.
You know, we had a thing on the ballot out here. I don't know if you knew about it. The initiative that said that porn actors had to wear condoms. It was on It was on a state referendum.
Yeah, that's on the state one.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You guys moved quickly up out in the West Coast. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they've been filming them out here for quite a while.
Yeah. That's pretty slow, actually.
Yeah. Industry, though. Is that like still a big industry these days? I thought that stuff was all free now.
I don't know.
I don't know. Tell me more.
I haven't done the research.
Tell me of this free that you speak of.
I thought we're... Oh, boy.
Wow. Maybe we end there.
Should we wrap it up? All right, well, it's been a blast, like usual. Listeners, thanks for listening in.
Thanks for coming back.
Yeah.
Hope you come back again.
Yeah.